Hello, this is Lincoln with the the Iroquois County Times Republic for October 9th, 2025, a Thursday. At the top of the front page, 130 on hand to honor Watseka Inspiration Award winners. The 115th Watseka Community High School Alumni Reunion Banquet, attended by 130 alumni and guests, was at the Homestead venue in Watseka on October 4th. Each year, one of the event highlights is the presentation of the Inspiration Awards. This year's honored recipients of the Athletic Inspiration Awards were Kathy Pugh Casey, Devin Curry Lindemann, and the 2014 girls volleyball team. Guests also witnessed an unexpected moment as the Athletic Inspiration Committee presented a surprise Athletic Inspiration Award to Carrie Bell. Bell, who currently chairs this committee, was unaware of his award and was genuinely moved as he received this recognition. His plaque information reads, a 1975 graduate of WCHS, Carrie Bell was a four-year multi-sport athlete who played football, basketball, track, and baseball throughout his high school career. In his senior year, he served as captain of the track team and co-captain of both the football and basketball teams, a testament to the respect he commanded among peers and coaches alike. Carrie's accomplishments and accolades during his high school career are unprecedented. His football honors alone reflect a remarkable level of talent and recognition. Conference football team, Kankakee All-Area football team, ICA Shriners All-State Football Team, Chicago Daily News All-State Football Team, Little All-Star Football Team, selected to play in the inaugural Illinois All-Star Football Game for the East Squad. During his senior season, Carey led the Warriors to a conference championship with a 6-0 record, an 8-1 regular season record, and a 10-2 overall record. In the semifinal game against Petersburg Porta, the Warriors triumphed 60-8. Carey set a state record of 6 touchdown passes, all in the first half, a record that still stands after 50 years. He finished the game completing 9 of 14 passes for 244 yards in that game alone. In Warriors basketball, Carey helped lead the team to a third-place finish in the 1974-1975 State Class A tournament. This is the furthest any Warriors team has advanced in school history. At that time, high school basketball featured only 2 team classifications. The Warriors averaged 75 points a game without the advantage of the 3-point line. Their season finished with a 25-8 record, with 4 of those losses coming against AA level opponents. Carey was selected to the All-Waseca Conference and all Iroquois County basketball teams that season. After graduating from college in 1979, Carey began a long distinguished career in banking. 1979 through 1982, First National Bank of Chrisman. 1982 to 1989, First National Bank of Watseka. 1989 to 2004, First National Bank of Ogden, serving as bank president by the age of 32. 2004 to present, president of the First Trust and Savings Bank of Watseka. His professional achievements are matched only by his deep civic engagement. Bell has been involved in many community and civic organizations throughout his banking career, but especially since his return to his hometown of Watseka. He has mentored several WCHS student athletes, offering them guidance, encouragement, and direction during their time at WCHS and after graduation. Carey continues to be a passionate supporter of all WCHS athletic programs, embodying the spirit of the community both in and out of uniform. He is a legacy builder and a quiet force of inspiration for generations of students and neighbors alike. Information about the other award recipients can be found in the September 25th edition of the Times Republic or at their website. Harvest Day's Pumpkin Patch winners announced by Kim Raby for the Times Republic. Couldn't have asked for better weather for this year's Harvest Day's event, which took place on the grounds of the Old Courthouse Museum, 103 West Cherry, Watseka, October 4th and 5th. The event, sponsored by Iroquois County Historical Society, is the group's largest fundraiser of the year. Proceeds are used for maintenance and upkeep of the museum, in addition to helping with utility bills. One of the fun events at Harvest Days is the Pumpkin Patch. Entries are sought from all ages and are set up for viewing by visitors. This year's theme was Pumpkins on Vacation, and visitors got to vote on their favorite entries. Winner in the Pick of the Patch category was Madison Evitz of Watseka. The rest of the results in this category were Noah Hansen, second, Watseka, Mario Perez, third, Watseka, Lily Kruger, fourth, Watseka, Lana Newman and Kaylee Clifton, tie for fifth, both of Watseka, Ellie Raby of Crescent City and Lillian Oliver of Watseka, tie for sixth, Cadence Schroeder, seventh, Watseka, and Aya Gray, 8th, Watseka. Ella Burton received first place in the Teen One Painted category. Others who placed in this category were Ava Varner, 2nd, Emerson Kingdon, 3rd, Lanny Kushnick, 4th, Scarlett Siebert, 5th, Chase Lynch, 6th, Liam Cross, 7th, and Felix Tovera, 8th, all are from Watseka. The first place winner in the Teen 2 Painted category was Madison Evitz of Watseka. Second went to Mario Perez, Watseka. Third went to Noah Hansen, Watseka. Fourth went to Morgan Snow, Watseka. Fifth went to Avery Pufall of Crescent City. Sixth went to Ellie Raby of Crescent City. Seventh place was a tie between Lillian Oliver and Lana Newman, both of Watseka. And eighth place went to Brooklyn Gioja of Watseka. Austin Todd of Watseka took first place in the adult painted category. Second place went to Nate McCain, and third place went to Jerry Ward, both of Watseka. Mikhail Berry of Watseka received first place in the youth painted category, with Elliot Dillon, Watseka, taking second. The President's Award went to Avery Pufall of Crescent City. Organizers of the Pumpkin Patch are Janet Anderson and Ginny Lee. For this year's patch, there were over 100 entries and more than 600 visitors to the patch. In total, more than 2,400 ticket votes were counted for all categories. This year there were 3 entries in the adult category, which is for those 18 years and older. 78 entries were registered for the Teen 2 category, which was for those 15 to 17 years of age. 21 were entered in the Teen 1 category, which is for those 12 through 14 years of age. And 2 entries were in the youth category, which is for those 11 years old and younger. All entries can be seen by visiting www.IroquoisCountyHistoricalSociety.com and clicking on the Harvest Days link. There was a tie for the winners of the Guess the Weight of the Pumpkins contest. Lanita Bayer of Watseka and Kaylee Brown of Milford both submitted guesses of 62 pounds, 8 ounces. The actual weight of this year's pumpkins was 61 pounds, 14 ounces. Appreciation goes to Robin Butler, art teacher at Watseka Community High School, for obtaining pumpkins for her students and encouraging them their creativity. Special appreciation is extended to Phil Wilkie, ag teacher and FFA advisor at WCHS, who rounds up his students to help with setting up and taking down of tents and the pumpkin patch display. Wilkie also serves as announcer during Harvest Days, keeping visitors up to date on events and activities. As a nonprofit group, ICHS relies on fundraisers and donations to keep going throughout the year. For more information about the Old Courthouse Museum or ICHS, call 815-432-2215 during regular business hours of 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. You can also visit their website, you can also email. A blueprint, Indiana Ready's replacement to long outdated waste management plan, by Leslie Bonilla Muñez for the Indiana Capital Chronicle. Indiana is finalizing a new vision to manage Hoosier waste from food, construction, technology, textiles, and more, and boost the economy. The project, spearheaded by the Indiana Department of Environmental Management and British contractor Eunomia, will replace a 20-year plan that has been in force for more than 3 decades. That plan was centered on disposal and basic waste handling, IDEM Commissioner Clint Woods said in a late August news release. Today, we need a forward-looking plan that reflects 35 years of innovation, shifting markets, and evolving environmental priorities. Building a circular economy can strengthen Indiana's economic future. IDEM won about $600,000 from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for the updates, according to the transcript of the 2023 meeting. The plan may consider recycling requirements, commercial food waste diversion requirements, and a per-ton surcharge on landfilled or incinerated waste, according to a late July meeting. That's alongside the infrastructure investments, public education, and more intended to advance the state's goal of recycling 50% of its waste. The final product is expected by the end of 2025. It will act as a blueprint for the state, solid waste management districts, industry, and more, IDEM spokesman Barry Sneed said. Local units of government can use the resulting guidelines, templates, and pass-through dollars to revisit their own antiquated plans. IDEM also hopes to uplift recyclers and manufacturers using recycled goods. You know, 1991 was the last plan. Think about all that's changed, Natalie Rodriguez, an agency spokeswoman, said at September Open House. Think about all the electronics that are now in the waste stream and the fact that we can recycle some of that as well. It's a commodity. Landfill gates lead to a lofty goal. Indiana made its first foray into solid waste regulations in 1953 when the General Assembly authorized county commissioners to establish dumps and adopt garbage-related ordinances for the protection of public health. Some were burn dumps. Lawmakers enacted an air pollution law in 1961, according to an IDEM history, but federal Clean Air Act amendments 4 years later spurred more changes. The state banned the open burning of waste in 1969, the same year cities and towns gained the power to manage their own waste facilities. Indiana didn't issue its first modern landfill permit until 1974, per IDEM, or its first waste management plan until 1980. The latter was a prerequisite for continued EPA funding. That year, Indiana had about 150 permitted landfills. Almost half of them had filled up and closed down within a decade, leaving 79 in 1990. Gates continue to lock on landfills, yet we still throw away tons of recyclable materials every single day, then-Governor Evan Bayh wrote in the introduction to the 1991 plan, which sought to avert a garbage crisis. It was one result of a sweeping law that mandated county solid waste management districts and set a 50% recycling goal for 2001. But 2 decades past that deadline, the state is recycling somewhere between 9% and 15% of waste and has just 34 landfills open, according to contractor Unoma and a 2021 IDEM study. Districts are optional, too. Those remaining keep pretty attuned to IDEM's activities, said Carla Streiger Winner, who leads the DuBois County Solid Waste Management District and is on the board for the Association of Indiana Solid Waste Management Districts. They go to the agency for grants, technical expertise, and more, but currently that plan is not something that we would even think about on a day-to-day basis. With it being a new plan, that could easily change, Streigel Winner said. I see it being more the big picture, she continued, and as being sort of the glue that could kind of pull us together. Contractor's strategy. Unoma's contract, worth up to $300,000, began last October and lasts a year. At July's online meeting, the consultant unveiled a short list of proposals that could help Indiana reach that 50% goal. Requiring commercial food waste generators, like grocery stores or restaurants, to divert the surplus from landfill to alternatives like composting or donation. Investing in sorting and processing infrastructure to increase facility capacity or improve how much material they can receive. Investing in collection pathways like adding drop-off sites and curbside recycling options or hosting community collection events. Educating Hoosiers on recycling practices and to raise awareness. Requiring Hoosiers separate recyclable materials from trash. Setting interim targets for the state as it works toward the 50% goal. Adding a per-ton surcharge to landfilled or incinerated waste. IDEM's Sneed noted the plan will provide data and insight to help inform decisions, but said that any recommendations for new legislation, regulations, or actions, including fees, would be up to the appropriate rulemaking bodies. The proposals were developed methodically. Contractors gathered data and conducted research on Indiana's waste management systems to create a baseline model of the status quo and a business-as-usual view of the future. They focused on the methods and materials that would make the biggest difference. Indiana's economy is losing out on more than $400 million annually when valuable materials like metal, plastic, paper, and more are trashed instead of recovered, according to the presentation. By prioritizing these materials for the model, we can focus on where we can feasibly have the greatest potential impact, Project Coordinator Iris Liu said. The consultants also conducted surveys and interviews with stakeholders, like solid waste management districts and recyclers. IDEM staff held open houses around the state to hear from more. They compiled a long list of ideas, then narrowed them down using a scoring sheet with considerations like implementation costs and stakeholder pushback and IDEM's input. The next step was to model the impacts of those proposals. Last is collecting it all in the state's new plan. Help wanted. In DuBois County, Strigel Winner's team is super small. Even as director, she does everything from answering the phones to doing payroll and even working at the site. The county of 47,000 residents is largely rural. One processing center takes old paint, household chemicals, electronics, and bulky waste. Recycling is done at 8 drop-off sites for free, while trash incurs a fee. But the logistics are challenging. We have a limit to the type of recycling that we can take. Those limits aren't because that we can't, in some way, shape, or form, recycled, Strigel Winner said. Those limits are because it's not feasible to try and get that from point A to point B, where somebody would want to purchase that and turn it into something new. The county can take glass, unlike others in southern Indiana. Clear and colorful glass must be separated and stored until there is enough to transport for recycling. Only plastics labeled 1 and 2 are accepted, also manually sorted because there's no specialized sorting facility nearby. People have to choose to do that sorting, and so we probably get a little less than if you just had a curbside bin out, Strigel Winner noted. She's interested in the prospect of sorting and processing aid. We do not have access to a lot of that infrastructure, she said. We need businesses that will set up in our area and be able to make money from sorting our stuff. All of that is going to be a huge improvement. Public education is also key. There's still tons of stuff going into landfill that shouldn't, Strigel Winner said. I feel like we've become more of a throwaway society. We get people thanking us all the time for the time that we take with them to help them understand. They don't know about us until they need us, and when they need us, we're here, she later added. We're here with those answers. We're here with those recycling and disposal options. For others, food waste is the next frontier. It represents a whopping 40% of the waste stream at Indiana University's Bloomington campus, for instance. That's according to Chief Sustainability Officer Jessica Davis, whose team advises all of IU's campuses. It's a pretty significant hit if we aren't able to recover that, which is why we're focused on solutions, she said. The Bloomington and Indianapolis locations had pretty robust composting programs pre-pandemic. Amid the chaos, many companies serving big institutions like IU stopped offering those services or even went out of business, per Davis. So, really, how can we extract the highest value out of this material ourselves, she said. Bringing composting in-house also kind of mitigates that risk of being overly reliant on external vendors. IU is piloting a food waste dehydrator purchased through a state grant. Removing the water makes it lighter and more compact and therefore cheaper to dispose of, Davis described. But the university is interested in using it, like for soil or biofuel. It's already submitted another grant application to buy an in-vessel composter to speed up the decomposition. Those efforts come in addition to a wide variety of existing programs, many of which bring financial perks alongside environmental ones. The university's used but serviceable items are sold back to campus so that employees, students, and community members can go shopping among the surplus. Huge amounts of stuff are collected from on-campus housing during the springtime move-out and are collected for free reuse or paid surplus instead of becoming a really big trash bill. Recycling contracts are some campuses include a per-ton rebate, too. Others programs are for the mission, Davis said, like fix-it clinics or free bicycle repair services in the fall and spring. Any skills that we can equip students with, even if it's maybe an outside-of-the-classroom skill, is of value, she continued. Students might have financial struggles, so if they can repair something for free or very cheaply, it might be just one less stressor in their life. The plan is also expected to include a focus on preventing waste. If we're not doing something about the waste that we currently have, we're drowning in waste, Purdue University professor John Sutherland said. But, you know, if we're trying to be smart, we should be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. We should be taking efforts to reduce the amount that we're generating in the first place. Sutherland leads the institution's Library for Sustainable Manufacturing and Environmental Engineering program. He's a fan of lean manufacturing that cuts out unnecessary materials, motions, and more in pursuit of efficiency. If I wait until I have waste, it's going to cost me, he said. By being smarter about the system that you create, not only do you reduce what you have to pay at the back end for disposal, but you've undoubtedly saved money by using less resources. Government action can make unwanted behaviors more expensive, but Sutherland was confident the incentives go deeper. I was doing this before the regulations were there, he said. I was helping companies get better without those. Decades ago, Sutherland helped Ford Motors eliminate expensive and dangerous metalworking fluids, along with related procurement and health costs. The move also meant less environmental remediation. Now his lab is working to make it easier to recycle rare earth elements, among the other projects. They're used technology from smartphones and wind turbines to medical and defense systems. It's an energy security issue, right? We're too reliant on non-domestic sources for these materials that are vital to the economy, Sutherland said. To me, you know, recycling and manufacturing of the stuff that we already have here, it just makes sense. Schwer Church continues 150-year anniversary celebration. St. John Lutheran Congregation of Schwer continues its celebration of God's 150 years of faithfulness on Pastor Appreciation October 12th. The morning will begin with donut fellowship time in the parish hall from 8:30 to 9:45 a.m., followed by the 10 a.m. worship service with guest speaker Pastor Jason Holt and special music. Following worship plans are for a typical Schwer potluck, meat and potatoes furnished. Visiting with pastors, greetings, and updates will complete our day. You are welcome to join us at St. John as we proclaim, O God, our help in ages past, our hope for years to come. This has been Lincoln reading for you the Iroquois County Times Republic for Thursday, October the 9th of 2025. Have a fabulous day.